When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Good morning, everybody, or I should say good afternoon. Big Georgia win. Georgia beat Auburn. Awesome. And we are celebrating that win. Follow the Bulldogs chase for the SEC championship here on the Home of the Dogs. I also have another little housekeeping note. Happy birthday, Orem. Crystal's dad, our executive producer, her dad turns 88 today. Happy birthday. I would sing to you, but the way my voice feels this morning, everybody would turn off the radio, and that is exactly the opposite of what I want them to do. So happy birthday, Orem. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm going to talk about something really personal today, something that happened last night that I think happens to almost everybody at some point in time in their lives. My son, Michael, who's going to be 17 in a few weeks, was driving, and we had a really bad snow and ice storm in Chicago last night. And he was out in the roads after his volleyball tournament and hit a huge patch of black ice, which everybody in Atlanta knows what black ice is. He hit a huge patch of black ice and did a 180-degree fishtail across three lanes. So it was a four-lane road. Ended up hitting somebody who, and I'm just going to start by telling you, everybody's fine. My son is fine. Our car, however, not so good. So we were, we went, fortunately had gone to an early play and to dinner with some friends. And so 9 o'clock, 9:30, when the call came in, we were already at home. And then we went out to get Michael, and it was really hazardous driving. I mean, just the snow was coming down. It was icy all over the roads. It looked it was just really, really bad. And, you know, Sam, who is not known for being psychic, I would say, by any stretch of the imagination, just had a bad feeling about Michael driving back because he had a long way to go to this volleyball tournament. And even though it wasn't super late at night, he was worried about all the ice and the snow. And so we get the call. And, you know, when you get this kind of a call from a kid, even if they are a wonderful driver, as Michael is, and they're trustworthy and all the rest, your heart just starts going about 3,000 miles an hour. And so we get back on the road, and Sam is talking to him, and of course, he's just terribly upset. He's like, there are pipes hanging out of the car, Mom. And I'm thinking, oh, it doesn't bode well for the car. And by the time we got there, the police were there, and they had already called the tow trucks. And, you know, fortunately, as I said, Michael is fine, and the other people that he hit were fine. And the roads, and on the way to get to Michael, which is about 20 minutes from our house, there were, I don't know, 7 or 10 accidents. I mean, police up and down the roads, the highways, the regular roads. It was just a really, really bad storm. So we get to the car, and I look at Sam, and he's like, I think it's totaled. I said, well, you know, maybe there's a way to fix it. But it's a 9-year-old car. So for those of you who have really been longtime listeners of the show, you probably remember when we bought this car. So this was back in 2005. And this just shows you, you know, the longevity of my relationship with WSB. At this point in time in 2005, almost exactly 9 years ago, I was filling in for Clark, and I was doing this show on Sundays, and, you know, I went through this whole thing about what kind of a car we should buy for our sons. Neither of them were nearly old enough to drive at that time, but we were looking ahead. And I think when you have kids who are going to be drivers, you think to yourself, what do you want them driving when they are ready to drive? And what we wanted them to drive was a super safe car. Right. So it had to have like the airbags and whatever that were available at the time. And we wanted it to be low mileage, which this car, as of yesterday, had just slightly under 40,000 miles for almost 9 years. So we knew it would never get that much use. And we wanted it to be big enough that if they hit somebody, that it wasn't going to smash the car into a little box and they would be dead. So those were the top priorities. And sure enough, that's what ended up happening with this car. It was already 4 years old when our older son Alex started to drive it. And 7 years old, or maybe five and seven, when Michael started to drive it. And here we are, it's, 9 years old next month. And, it probably won't live to see its ninth birthday, at least not with us owning it. And so, Michael is, of course, devastated that he's, trashed the car. And we are thrilled that he's walked away from it. In fact, the cops said to him last night, they didn't even give him a ticket. It was just ridiculous how bad the ice was under this bridge. And he said, listen, your parents are probably mad at you now. And we're like, no, we're not mad. And he said, look, your parents aren't even mad at you. This is great. Cheer up. It's going to be fine. Everybody goes through this. And it just speaks to the value of, one, what it is you're driving and what you let your kids drive. And secondly, insurance. So insurance has become increasingly tougher to keep. And what's really interesting is when you start having accidents and you carry an umbrella liability policy, Sam and I are starting to get stories from people who it's not that their auto insurance is getting canceled. It's their umbrella liability policies that are getting canceled because they can cover to some greater or lesser extent the amount of damage on the car. What they can't cover, if you're going to have several accidents or, multiple accidents or one after another, they can't cover the extending liability that somebody gets injured or their insurance doesn't cover everything, and now they've got a $1 million bill to pay because there's no way to adjust rates for a $1 million bill. And so we're starting to hear stories about people starting to lose their umbrella liability insurance. And so those of you who follow the show, you know that I talk a lot about umbrella liability insurance. We're big fans of it. We carry a lot of it. And we think it's a great way to kind of over-insure whether you've got objects in your house that are too big to be covered under, or too many of them to be covered individually, or you've got, rental properties. We think it's a great thing for that. So this is something to be watching for because it seems to be a place that insurance companies are looking to cut back. So back to the car. So now we have, and this is what I did 9 years ago when we were in 2005 looking for a car. We crowdsourced it. I didn't know I was so ahead of the game because today, that's what everybody does. They say to everybody else, what do you think we should buy? So we started looking at new cars last night when neither of us, Sam or I, could sleep. Michael went right to sleep, which was good. And Sam and I were having a little trouble getting our heart rates to come back to normal. And so we started looking at cars. And of course, we've been buying Hondas all these years. And so it's easy for us to just take another Honda to the dealer, and they've been good cars, and of course, Michael is fine, so this is a very good car. So then we were trying to decide, should we buy the Honda Civic? Should we buy a Honda Fit? So Sam said, throw it out to your listeners, see what they said. So tweet me at Glink, at GLINK, or you can call the show, and we can talk about this a little bit. But we are now evaluating what's going to happen next, because Michael is a junior, so he's got another year and a half of really a lot of driving, fair amount of driving. He'll drive to volleyball, he'll drive to school, whatever it is. And then he's gone, and Alex is already gone. And so then it's a matter of, do Sam and I want to drive a Honda Civic or a Honda Fit? So this is going to be the topic of discussion on and off over the next couple of weeks as we figure out what to do with this car. And if you want to weigh in, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Now, of course, we are going to talk about other things like real estate and money, and there's a lot going on with gas and oil prices, which is so interesting. I had a conversation with somebody from Europe on Friday who was saying he thinks that before 2020, the U.S. will be energy independent, and the effect that that's going to have on gas. So 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Deborah joins me on the line now from Suwannee. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, how are you doing?
My heart rate is slowly coming back to normal this morning. How about you?
Good. I can empathize. My 17-year-old had an accident going to prom a couple of years ago, so I empathize completely.
Oh, my gosh. Was he okay?
Yeah, he was okay. He did hit someone, but he was okay. No ice storm, but he was okay. And I think that it's great that you brought up the whole umbrella policy issue, because after that accident, that prompted me to get the umbrella policy.
Right. And that's really, I think umbrella accident liability, umbrella liability policies are incredibly valuable and relatively inexpensive for all the good that they do.
Absolutely. It's interesting you mentioned that, because now that he's of age and he has his own insurance, do you keep that policy intact? What's your advice?
Well, it depends what other needs you have for it. So we do, because we have rental properties, and I know that there's someday somebody's going to stumble on the stairs and I'm going to, you know, get hit with something. So we are keeping it and we have other, you know, issues as well that make sense for it. For you have to take a look and sort of see how well am I covered, because of course you could go broke in America buying insurance, all different kinds of insurance. There's insurance for every single thing. I remember doing a show years ago. I listed like 20 different kinds of insurance the typical, you know, homeowner could buy. So you have to decide, you know, if you don't have rental properties, you don't really have any other liability, maybe no. But if you do have a lot of assets and something is going to happen to it, I mean, even a paid off house, right, that you're depending on for retirement in some way, shape or form, then yes, the answer is umbrella liability insurance is probably really helpful, because it'll cover the lawyer. It'll cover, you know, if there's a huge, you know, thing against you, award against you, it'll cover that. And if you have a lot of assets, you know, people will sue when they feel like there's money to be had. So if you have assets, they may go after it, even if they're not entitled to. And that's what umbrella liability policies cover. I know you have a question about home inspections. We have to go to a quick break. Can you hang with us and we'll come back after the break and talk about home inspections?
Absolutely.
All right. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll come back and talk with Deborah about home inspections and all of your other real estate topics on the Elyse Kling Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elyse Kling is live, answering your money and real estate questions. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We still have some lines open, but I'm going to finish talking to Deborah from Suwannee. Deborah has a question about inspections. So what's going on, Deborah?
I am purchasing a green home, and I wanted to get a home inspection. Of course, it's new construction. And so I looked for a green certified home inspector, which I found, and he found some items. And when I took those items back to the builder, the independent builder, you know, it seems like some issues because of what he found and his motive on trying, actually he has issues with his competitor who also does the rating, the HERS rating for energy efficiency. So there was some kind of internal strife between who did their HERS rating and the home inspector. And so it seems like a vendetta between the builder and this inspector, and I'm kind of caught in the middle. So I'm trying to stay objective. I just need the report, and I need to share the items I find and use that as my punch sheet for closing.
Yes.
Am I kind of treading right in the middle where I need to be?
Yeah, you really, I don't know what's going on with them. It sounds like a ridiculous pissing contest for some silly thing that doesn't concern you. But if this guy is actually a real inspector that you found, and let's assume he is, and that he is green certified, and he has found some issues, all he needs is the written report, which you actually should have gotten before he walked off the property. Most inspectors today do their things electronically, and then they can email it to you, and then usually often find a way to print it up as well. So you should have that sort of ASAP. And then go back to the builder and just say, hey, this is what he found. The rest of it does not concern me. You keep out of it. Don't get involved in whatever is going on between the two. And if the builder balks, then you have to, and I assume you haven't closed yet, then what you're going to have to do is get an attorney to enforce the terms of the contract, which is that he's going to have to do the punch list. Usually that happens afterwards, but you want to get as much of it done ahead of time. And if he has issues with that, then you can ask him to put forward his own person who can talk about what's right or wrong. But, you know, that guy's going to take the builder's side. So just play it in the middle, be as professional as you can, and keep pushing for what you know is right. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more in a moment on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live, here to guide you through your money and real estate questions, only on News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. The number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. All right, we've got a couple of open lines, but we've also got some people on hold. So let's go back and talk to Charles from Decatur. Hey, Charles.
Hey, good afternoon. I guess it is afternoon now.
It is finally afternoon, yes.
Yes. I do have a question. I noticed that recently that when we changed automobile policies that, like you said, they canceled our umbrella policy.
Right.
But we still had a homeowner's policy with them, and I was really confused about that.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they basing the umbrella on the homeowners when just as well base it on the, rather than the automobile?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they do that. I think traditionally umbrella policies are tied more to homeowners' policies than to the auto insurance policies. Now, in the case of some people that we know who have had this happen, they've had the homeowners and the autos with the same company. So when they go, when they've had an accident, because those are all tied together, those three things, the umbrella is getting dropped. So if you just had homeowners and an umbrella versus auto and an umbrellas, I've now invented a new word for Sunday. Umbrellas. But if you tied those two together, the auto and the umbrella or the homeowners and the umbrella, if you have too many homeowners tags, right, too many claims on your homeowners, you will get the homeowners canceled because rather than the umbrella canceled. So this must have to do, and I hope somebody can call in and educate all of us, but this must have to do with statistically, if you have 2+ auto accidents within X period of time, it is Y more likely to, you know, require an umbrella liability issue. And so I think that there's some sort of formula there people have come up with in risk management, and it probably attaches more to autos than homes. But I don't know that.
Well, the thing is they canceled it because I moved to the automobile to another company.
Ah. Well.
Which was really kind of threw me off a little bit.
Did they tell you they were going to do that?
No.
Hmm.
It was basically what happened was is the automobile was being insured by one company. The house mm-hmm. was being insured by another one. We had an automobile that was insured by the other company that also had the house, but we sold that vehicle.
Okay.
And then got a new one. So instead of getting another policy to them, it was cheaper to go with the other company.
Right. So
out of the blue, they just said, because you don't have an automobile policy with us anymore, we're canceling your umbrella.
Interesting. You could go to the other auto policy, the other company, and say to them, what would you charge for an umbrella liability policy? You can also go back and say, oh, I'm back in the market for an umbrella liability policy, and then requote the auto insurance and see if now that car is a little bit older, if they'll go back and do it. And in fact, it's important to requote all of these insurance policies every couple of years, because it's amazing to me how if you just stay with them, you don't get rewarded for that. What you do is you get charged for that.
Right.
Excuse me. And so they raise your policy rates, sometimes astronomically, and so you have to continually get through to the retention department, which is where they make decisions about giving you a break on that. So, Charles, I think it's just, if it's been a couple of years since all that happened, time to go back and see if there's anything that they can do for you. And think about whether you move all of it over to the new auto company. But remember, the most important thing is, of course, that you're covered by a solid company that isn't going anywhere. You want to make sure that you are truly or have the proper coverage that you need. Thanks for your call this morning. It is 40 minutes past the hour. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Nancy joins me on the line. Hi, Nancy. Nancy, you with us? Hi, good morning. Welcome, or good afternoon. Welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Good afternoon.
How can I help you today?
I'm calling to ask your opinion regarding the real estate market. I have a home for sale that's been for sale for over a year.
Is it a single family home or a condo or what?
It's a single family home.
Okay.
And it's in a country club community. It's one story brick. And all of the feedback is that it is lovely and shows very well, and but no offers. It's been shown a lot, but no offers. And so I recently had it appraised, and even the appraiser said, because there are so many basement homes, it's difficult, you know, to compare this one-story brick on a crawl space to basement homes. So my question is, how does one really decide on a selling price and trying to decide if the problem is the selling price? And
Nancy,
I could take it off the market. Yes.
I'm going to tell you right now, the problem's your price.
Okay.
You have overpriced your house for what people want in the neighborhood that they go into. And if the appraiser didn't tell you, and it sounds like you didn't really get an appraisal, and so you should ask for your money back. Because if he said, oh, well, it's difficult to know because nothing's the same and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's, he's just, you know, it is hard to know. That's why you hired a separate appraiser. You should never have hired him, by the way. You should have, what is your real estate agent telling you?
Well, she has done a lot of talk on that, but she did calculations extracting basements, and he said you really can't do that. So he said that's comparing apples to oranges. So I think she thinks the house is worth a little bit more. And those have told me you couldn't. I mean, what it would take to build this home is considerably more than what the market will currently bear, and that's just the situation we're in. That's just the reality.
Okay, so I'm just going to tell you that you probably need a different real estate agent, but what you really need to do is lower the price. So nobody believes you're willing to sell it for the price that they're willing to pay, and that is either...
Can you repeat that last statement? I couldn't hear the whole thing.
I said that you're overpriced, you probably need a new real estate agent, and that it's clear to me that nobody believes you're willing to sell this house for the price they're willing to pay, and so nobody's even making an offer.
Okay.
That must be being communicated by your agent, and maybe she's taking direction from you because you're like, I'm not going to, you know, we're not going below this price. So after a year, you should just forget about selling if you're not willing to lower your price.
Okay. And I had a question, and I forgot what it was.
You are completely fading out, Nancy. So I'm just going to add a couple of. I'm putting you on hold because I can't hear you anymore. You're wherever you're driving. It's a little bit of a funky cell tower issue. But here's what you should do now. You should go and find several other companies that sell homes in your neighborhood, and you should ask them to all come in and give you a comparative marketing analysis. They should show you all the properties that have sold and what they've sold for, and find something or anything in this community that's similar to yours. If there's nothing, you've got a white elephant, and not in a good way, right? Because nobody wants to be the one that's got the price that's, you know, the property that's completely different from everything else. You never want to be at the high end for sure, where you're way ahead of everybody else. But you may be so far behind everybody else by not having a basement, it's really going to hurt you. So if your house is currently listed, let's just imagine at $250,000, and homes with basements are selling at $250,000 that are bigger than yours, that are two stories, that's what everybody wants in this neighborhood. So now you've got to appeal to somebody who's an empty nester couple that wants to be near their children who live in the neighborhood. And so maybe you need some more creative marketing ideas for this property. So a different agent may have those. Or maybe what you need to do is you need to advertise to the community itself and says, does anybody need a perfect empty nester house for parents who want to, you know, grandparents who want to live near their kids, have their own house on one level, and you need to market to them because that's who's going to end up buying your house anyway. But you have to get much more realistic about your price if you want to sell. And if not, then you should think about renting this house so you can go move on with your life. And those are probably some options you should seriously consider. Let me know what happens. Either call back the show next week when you've had a chance to think about it and you're in a better cell reception, or send me an email to questions@thinklink.com. Questions@thinklink.com. All right, good luck, Nancy. 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Johnny joins me on the line from Washington State. Hey, Johnny, welcome to the program.
Hey, good day, Lise.
What's going on in your world?
We're out here, we're freezing out here, but I was listening to your other callers talk about they use different insurance companies for different products. Like, currently, we have an umbrella policy, but in order to get that, we had to bundle everything, our rental property, our automobile property, and even the real estate investment property that we have.
Yep.
So are we hearing that you can still split it up, or some firms, depending on who they are, require you to bundle?
Right. So it's a great question, and the answer is yes and yes. So yes, insurance companies know that it is much easier to keep you than to go out and find new people like you to have as customers. And so what they're trying to do is incentivize you to come and put everything together. So you should shop around, because shopping around will tell you if, A, it's worth it to move everything over to this other company, or parts of it, or if you can then take the price points that you're getting and go back to your original company and say, listen, I don't want to leave you, retention department, but these are the prices I'm getting. Is there anything you can do to help me out?
Good
and
idea.
they may just lower your prices on things because they already know with five, you know, policies in place, replacing you as a customer is going to cost them a grand or more. If they keep you and they can, you know, give you a $500 discount, I'm making up those numbers, but you get the idea. They've made money, you're saving money, you're happy, they're happy.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, so just shop it around, and I think you'll be happy.
Will do. All the best.
Hey, thanks for listening, Johnny, all the way from Washington State. Stay warm out there. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. When we come back, we're going to do, I think, a few more questions, because this is what we're here to do, is to help you out. And we also are going to do a prize pack next hour, and I want to talk a little bit more about what is going on with falling gas prices. There's something really interesting there. Today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution has an in-depth report on the life of a 19-year-old FedEx employee who went to work last April with a 12-gauge shotgun and, I hate to say this, a desire to kill. Check that out. 48 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online, on Twitter, and having a really interesting conversation, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Here's a little Twitter tip. If you are tweeting me and you want to ask me something that only I'll see, you just do at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. But if you want everybody to see a comment on a comment stream, you have to put a dot, a period, in front of the at Glink, and then everybody will see it. Or you can just start with just any kind of a question and then put at Glink somewhere in there. But if you start with the at sign, no matter what you put in front of that, whatever name it is, then only that person, it comes up in their feed, their personal notifications, as opposed to going out into the general public. And this Twitter tip brought to you by ThinkLink Media. 404-872-0750. Chad is an insurance agent. He joins the show. Chad, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So you've been listening to us talk about umbrella liability coverage.
I have. I work specifically with real estate brokers, actually, for their professional insurance. And I get this question a lot about umbrella policies and agents recommending umbrella policies when they're shopping for their homeowners insurance. I just think it's important that people understand what the umbrella policy is and when they need it and when they don't need such a policy.
That's great.
The umbrella policy, what people need to understand if they're in the market for something like this, is that it is always going to be in excess of whatever coverage you have currently. If it's your home, and if you have a $500,000 liability coverage on your home, the umbrella policy will not pay $1 until you get to $500,001 of damages or claims or liability.
Right.
And at times, I think homeowners get confused thinking, well, you know, I'm getting another $1 million of coverage for $300, $400, whatever the bundle price is, but they need to even establish if that's something that they need. Do they have enough assets to where they're concerned that they're going to have liability beyond what their current policy covers? So making sure you have the right liability amounts on your primary policy, I would think, would be the main concern, and not worrying so much about can we bundle an umbrella, or is it available, or did it get canceled?
Well, but people are concerned if they've had it and it does get canceled and they do have assets, particularly, you know, there are a lot of baby boomers who are entering retirement and they have rental properties and they do have a lot of assets that they've, but to your point, you know, anything in a 401k or an IRA does not count because that is exempted. They can't go after that unless you take it out of those accounts. So your point is well taken, that you really need to establish you have plenty of other assets to protect in order to, and that's one way to determine how big a policy you really need.
Exactly. And, you know, if they are baby boomers and do have rental properties, they need to also think about possibly putting them in an LLC, something that is going to protect their personal assets. That way, maybe the insurance, although it's wonderful, maybe you don't even have to use it because of the way you're protecting your assets from a legal standpoint.
Right. But LLCs can be pierced, and I would never recommend to somebody that you don't need umbrella liability coverage simply because you're in an LLC. What you need then is different kinds of policies, as you know, because you're working with real estate brokers.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I really appreciate
that comment. Thank you.
Well, thank you for calling in, Chad. I always welcome all kinds of smart listeners calling in and sharing their knowledge and information with all of our listeners. So I do appreciate that, and I hope you have a great weekend. Go Dogs! 58 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Starting with yours, our phone number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'll be back in a few minutes to answer more of your questions and to talk a little bit about oil prices next on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live, answering your money and real estate questions. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Starting with yours, News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. The number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. And don't forget to join the conversation on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. So I'm sure you have gone to the pump over the last week or so. We were bemoaning that, for those of you just tuning in, my son Michael had a car accident, probably totaled our 2006 Accord. He's fine. But Sam had just filled up the tank for him. He said, I'm so glad I didn't get the oil changed. And yet filling up the tank is a whole lot less costly as we're going into this Christmas season as it was a year ago and the year before that. And in fact, we're seeing what people are calling the big chill in gas prices, oil prices. We're seeing oil prices, they drop below like $73, $74, $75 a barrel. And the New York Times the other day talked about it being the barrel stimulus, where they quoted somebody, you know, a corporate chief CEO-y kind of a guy, saying if oil prices stay between $75 and $95 a barrel, we'll see the kind of stimulus package that the Federal Reserve or Congress could never do. Wouldn't that be great as we go into Christmas to not have to spend quite as much money on gas? In fact, I was at Costco yesterday, and I was looking. I almost filled up the car, but I still had a half tank, so I thought, I'll wait. I'm going to be at Costco six times now between now and Thanksgiving, and I can talk about that a little bit later on this hour. But the price at Costco was like $3.01. It was crazy, $3.01. Sam and I are like, geez, you know, you could drive around the city, even in Chicago, where gas prices are always noticeably higher than in Atlanta, and you are seeing the upper twos. It's insane for so many reasons, but it's interesting because we had another conversation, and I was saying this last hour with a friend of ours who's in from Israel, and he is very involved in science and technology, and he was saying, look, it's, you know, the U.S. is going to be energy independent before 2020. Okay, this is, we're about to enter 2015. 2020 is 5 years away. That is just not very much time. So U.S. is going energy independent. Oil prices are going down. It has dramatic political ramifications across the world, right? From ISIS, which gets millions of dollars, you know, in revenue from, you know, taking over oil and gas fields in the Middle East, to what happens to the Middle East rulers in stable economies when they don't get as much money, and then to what's happening here. And so oil production is surging in the U.S., and it's past 9 million barrels, I want to say, a day. It's crazy how much we're producing at the moment. But when oil prices go down, a lot of the fracking stuff that became economically feasible, right, when gas prices and oil prices were so high, stops being quite as healthy, right? The profits aren't quite as there. And so that puts a drag on lots of other things. And so one person who watches this is a woman named Stephanie Pomboy, out of the Manhattan Institute. And she says, without the $300-400 billion yearly increase in output from oil and gas, economic growth in this country would still be negative. So it surged in 2012, which is when we started to see a little bit more traction in the economy. But a lot of that, if you took out the oil and gas production that we're doing in this country, she argues that we'd still be in a negative economic state. We would be in a contraction, which is really, if you watch what's going on around the world, what's happening region by region by region. Europe is contracting. China is contracting, still, you know, still in a net positive, but not anywhere near where they probably would like to be or where they should be. Russia admitted at the conference this week, the APEC conference, that they're, you know, they're having some difficulties. Latin America is having some difficulties. And so lower oil prices are now this kind of net negative. It used to be that if oil prices went over $100 a barrel, you were, you know, or even $70 a barrel, you were going to see the U.S. go into recession. Now, if they go under $75 to $95 a barrel, you might see the world go into recession, and then the U.S. would just sort of follow it. And it's a very interesting kind of a shift. Right? Because if you lower the price of oil, if the U.S. is energy independent, then the lower price of oil, because oil is priced in dollars around the world, will be a bigger hit to domestic energy producers. And that would be greater than the benefit of low energy prices to energy consumers. Does that make sense to you? So people who listen to the show, we're all the consumers, right? And it's great to pay less at the gas pump. You know, we've all been paying a whole lot for a whole long period of time. So lower oil prices mean lower gas prices at the pump. We're happy. But the people who are making it, not so much. And if that's how the U.S. is pushing its economic agenda, right, then it may be bad overall for the country. So that goes back to something we've been talking about in the show week in and week out over the last few years, which is that the vast majority of Americans don't feel like the economy's in better shape. In fact, there was another poll this week, that said when you ask Americans what the unemployment rate is, they tell you, a majority of them tell you that it feels like it's 30% unemployment in this country. We're at 5.7-ish, 5.8 official, and even if you look at the U6, it's only like 11, 12, 13%. It's nowhere near 30%. So why do so many people in this country feel like they are, that there's a 30% unemployment rate? The reason is because they and everybody in their family and the people they know are not making any more money, are maybe working part-time instead of full-time, or they've been laid off and now they're all 1099s being contract employees with no benefits. You know, they personally, the people that get polled, must personally feel hit and can hit on a continuing basis by what's going on in the economy. So it's just interesting to kind of see what's going on. And you can read this in this week's Barron's, where Randall Forsythe wrote something called The Big Chill. And, you know, the conclusion of his story is that lower oil prices will exert a larger, more sustained drag as they flow through the energy sector. And even though we might get an immediate bump, so because you're spending less now at the pump, you might go out and spend that extra money on Christmas gifts, right? Because we're, geez, have you looked at everywhere lately? It's Christmas blossoming everywhere. We haven't even had turkey yet. So it's Christmas season. You're going to spend more maybe now, but there's a lot of concern about what's going to happen in the first quarter of next year. And you'll remember what happened in the first quarter of this year, right? Big, huge contraction. Big contraction at the beginning of this year, which was completely unexpected, both for the fact that we had any contraction and how big the contraction was. And now there's some concern about what's going to happen in the first quarter of next year. So obviously, I'll keep talking about this. You know, you're welcome to call in and we can try chat about it as well. We'll see what happens. And hopefully we're going to get through this okay. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. It is 15 minutes past the hour. Let's go back to the phones. David joins me on the line. Ooh, that's a bit of an echo. David? I don't hear David. Okay. Let's try. Let's see if Louise is on the line. Louise?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. Welcome to the program.
Okay, thanks.
What's going on today?
Okay. So I have a very nice house, two-story basement, corner lot, almost an acre, beautiful landscape. The house has a lot of problems. I'm not interested in fixing any of it. I talked to a couple of the realtors. All they want me to do is fix so they'll make it, so it'll make it easy on them to sell. But I don't want to do anything to the house. I want to sell it as is. It'd be best if it went to like a contractor who could kind of flip it. So I'm willing to negotiate, obviously.
So let's go back just a little bit. What's wrong with your house? I just want to know.
Okay. Yeah, I'll tell you. It's built in 79, and the kitchen is the original kitchen.
The kitchen
needs to be done. But then it has a settling problem on one end of the house, which apparently is caused
Big cracks in the basement, okay.
There's one crack in the basement and the fireplace has separated somewhat.
Okay.
Yeah, hasn't fallen off yet, but I have gotten a quote just to please the realtor. I got quotes for putting a thing that would not make the fireplace no longer settle.
Mm-hmm.
Go around the house and they dig down and put all these.
How much is that?
I got quotes anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000. So I'm willing to just knock the price by that. You know, I don't want to sit here and watch workmen. I don't want to pay. You know, I just basically don't have the time. I have to work. So, you know.
I totally get it. Not everybody wants to do that. So you really need a different kind of agent. You need an agent who wants to sell a property to an investor who's willing to put in some work.
Yes.
The problem is a lot of investors don't want to put in that kind of work. So what are homes that are in better shape than yours in your neighborhood selling for?
Well, I sold them at there was one that was just listed, and they've got it at $385. It's not as nice for a lot. It's not as nice a house. I mean, if my house was in good shape, it's not as nice a house as if my house was in good shape.
Okay.
If my house was in good shape, maybe it'd be $400.
Okay.
$350, maybe, like that.
Okay. You know. And so what are you asking? What do you want to get out of the house?
I'm going to say $250. I just want to get out.
Okay, so at $250, you need a new kitchen, which is probably another $40 or $50, and you need to fix this thing, which is probably another. I'm going to split the difference, and we're just going to say $10 to $15.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what are we at now? We're at $65,000 plus. It needs to be painted and recarpeted, so $75,000-$80,000 back of the napkin. You probably need some new bathrooms, right?
Well, I did do the commodes a lot, by required by law. You know, I changed all of those.
Yeah, but you didn't like put in a really beautiful bathroom, did you?
No.
So you need new bathrooms. Those are 20 each, assuming you don't have to move any walls or redo any piping. So we're at $100,000. So if your house was in good shape, it needs $100,000 at a minimum of work. And you said if your house was in good shape, it would sell for $350,000, and you want $250,000, but there's no profit in that for an investor.
Mm-hmm.
So you would probably need to price your house around $200,000 to $225,000, and then you'll get some people interested. And I think that if I were you, because you probably don't want to pay, a real estate agent on top of that.
Right. Yeah.
That I would either use a site like auction.com or forsalebyowner.com. And now you're going to have to do the work for that. But there are places that you can list your home. And there are even real estate agents you can list your home with who deal mostly with investors. And you can put a big sign in your yard, investor special, and people drive around. And if it's in a really good neighborhood, somebody will see your sign and they're going to call you. But I'm just, you need to be as realistic as you can, Louise, because, you know, you've got to leave room in there for them to make money, because somebody's going to have to want to make money if they're going to sit through the pain in the neck of doing the renovation. And you actually have, with structural issues, we didn't even price in a structural issue. Structural issues are really scary for people, even investors, because they mostly want houses that they can fix and flip that just need minor, you know, they want to do carpet and paint and bathrooms and kitchens. They don't want to worry that if they cannot get that crack in the basement fixed. So you might need to do that and get that thing fixed, and you may need to do the fireplace, and that's just so you don't have to sell it for $150,000. Because they're going to price in the risk. So that's why the agent's pushing you to get some of these issues fixed, because those may mean the difference between selling or not selling at all. Okay?
Okay. All right.
It's not the answer you want, I'm sorry to say. Okay,
house was bought for $110,000 in 1980.
Yeah. Well, it may be that it's only that you know, I wish you'd taken care of these problems as they happened before they became really big, huge issues. But unfortunately, structural issues like a fireplace separating and a big crack in the basement are things that could make your house worthless. Because if it can't be fixed, nobody wants to take the risk. So even though you've got somebody saying, oh, I could fix the fireplace separation for $5,000 to $20,000, you know, fixing the crack in the basement may be another $25,000, and that right there, you got $50,000, and you haven't touched the kitchen and the bathrooms and the carpet and the paint. So you've got a lot of work that needs. It's when you told me your house is beautiful, it is beautiful to you, but an investor's going to come by and they're going to go, "Wow, this is a whole lot of work. I got to figure that out." 22 minutes past the hour. We got to go to a break. I'll be back in a moment with more on WSB. We've got a family four-pack of tickets to see the Gwinnett Gladiators versus South Carolina November 25th at the arena at Gwinnett Center, and a pair of tickets to the Alliance Theater's presentation of A Christmas Carol November 21st to December 20th. Value $210. We're going to give it to the fifth caller at 404-741-0750. Be back in a moment with more of the Elise Glink Show on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live, here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on News 95.5 and AM 750. WSB.
It's 1:35 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours here in WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm sorry we had the abbreviated last segment where I basically spit out what we were doing for the prize pack, but I had gone on just a bit too long with Louise about her house. It's funny how you're supposed to, as a radio talk show host, this is a little bit behind the scenes stuff. You're supposed to constantly be watching the time, and I was, but I got so engaged in her question and thinking about what, you know, and mentally adding up all of these things and how basically, you know, a crack in the basement can be the death knell for selling any house. Nobody wants to do any work on houses these days. if you're selling, you have to really understand that nobody has the time. They're all like Louise. Everybody's working and busy and has a million things to do, and nobody wants to watch over construction workers who may or may not be good, may or may not do the right job. Everything's gotten so complex, it's really hard to understand what they're doing, to know if they're doing the right job that you're paying them for. Sam was recounting a story last night at the dinner table about how when we redid our house 15 years ago, we put on a, the contractor put on a, roof, the roof leaked right away, like within a couple of months, and then we, massive leaks, so we had to put on a new roof, and then that leaked, and a new roof, and we went on with three or four roofs to the place where over a period of 3 or 4 years, we were completely battle-scarred, and Sam's like, oh, I guess, well, every year we'll have to put on a new roof. And there was really, only because I was obsessively taking pictures, did we even figure out that it was the first and second times that people were putting on the material the wrong way, and we finally got the company out, because, of course, the original company went bankrupt, and then the next company went bankrupt, and who has time for this? So what I was saying to Louise is, fix up your house. You know, do the worst things so that even if it's a pain in the neck for you, it makes your house, it's the difference sometimes between selling and not selling. I think sellers don't understand that. They think, well, I've been patient all through this great recession. Now it's my turn to sell and it's a seller's market and whatever. Yeah, it is. But not if you have a massive crack in your basement and your fireplace is separated from the wall. This is not a beautiful house. It's a beautiful house to you because you're living in it and you've raised your kids in it or whatever. But an investor comes in and goes, God, that's a headache. I'd rather buy this house down the street that really just needs, paint and carpet because that's just better. So really interesting all the way around. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Marilyn joins us on the line from Billings, Montana. Marilyn?
Hi there.
Hi, you have to take us off speaker.
I'm sorry?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, what's going on in your world in Billings, Montana?
It's cold.
It's cold here, too.
Yes.
It's going to be cold all week.
Lots of snow.
Yeah, it's, not, it's that time of year or a little bit earlier,
yes,
I suppose.
And it's Montana, so we have to expect it.
Well, I'm so glad that you called. How can I help you today?
Well, I was calling about what the things I should be looking for with a company that does reverse mortgages.
Right. So tell me a little bit about why you want a reverse mortgage.
Well, I got to get out from under the mortgage payment for one thing.
Okay. How much do you have in equity in your property?
You know what? I don't even know. I do not know how much the equity is in it.
Okay, well, that's a big, important piece, because the first thing that's going to happen is the mortgage company is going to say, you don't even have enough equity in your property to trade this out. So reverse mortgages got their start when people would had no mortgage at all and wanted to be able to stay in the house, but they had work they needed to do. And so somebody came up with the idea for a reverse mortgage, and you were able to get money out of your house and stay there. Then we had all these baby boomers who started retiring with big mortgages that they had just taken out. And the lenders came in and said, okay, well, you've got a small enough mortgage and enough equity. We can literally trade it out so that we can get rid of your payment, but you won't have any access to any cash.
Oh,
so
I see. Okay.
That's how that worked. Now, The interest rates are low, so that works in your favor, but if you have a huge mortgage, you may or may not have.
Well, it's not huge.
Well,
I mean,
how many years into it are you?
But I mean, it's not what.
All right. How many years into it are you?
Eight.
Okay. And how long was it? A 30-year?
Yes.
Okay. And how much did you take out?
Pardon me?
How much did you take out? How much did you borrow? Was it 80% of the value of the house when you did it?
Yes.
80%. So you had 20% equity.
Mm-hmm.
And so 8 years ago was at the height of the market, and I don't really know a whole lot about Billings, Montana property, but what happened to property values in your neighborhood?
I haven't heard that they've suffered that much.
Over the last 8 years through the Great Recession?
No, I'm out in the country. It's an ideal location. People kind of kill to be out here.
Okay.
It's quiet, and it's just so peaceful out here.
Why don't you sell your house?
And I have a whole acre.
Why don't you sell your house?
Pardon me?
Have you thought about selling your house?
I have, but I have a yellow lab that you can't just take in anywhere, and I'm not leaving without her, so.
Okay. So here's the, how much money are you missing out of your budget?
A month, it's $549, something like that.
$549
yeah.
is what you need to be whole each month.
Yeah. I guess what I need to know is, how do I know a scammer from the real thing comes to this?
Okay, so Marilyn, there are very few people who even do reverse mortgages, and you really want to find, really it's the federal government that's doing them, but very few are now getting done
mm-hmm.
at the moment because a lot of these reverse mortgage companies have gotten really hit hard during the Great Recession.
Uh-huh.
So you should look online. You can talk. It's usually going to be a national lender. You can call your Montana Department of Banking and Finance and ask who is licensed to do mm-hmm. reverse mortgages in your state. You can look online for some of the big reverse mortgage companies. But there's really only one program right now, and it's the one that's a HUD program
mm-hmm.
for the HECM, the HECM mortgage.
Have you ever heard of Select One?
I have not heard of Select One,
okay.
But none of the really big companies like Bank of America or Chase are doing reverse mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have a smaller company. The best way to find out about a company, of course, is to go online in the Internet and type in their name into Google's search engine along with the word complaints. This is really how you check out anything. And you have to see what comes up.
Oh,
because
okay.
if people are... So this is another one of those little tricks that journalists okay. use online to try and figure out who's legitimate and who's not legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you go online and you look for that, what ends up happening is you will see any complaints that people have made about this company anywhere in the world. It works for almost anything.
Oh, okay. So
you should do that. But what I was trying to get to is there another way... Instead of refinancing your mortgage with, a reverse mortgage,
mm-hmm.
which will literally suck up any more equity that you have in your property, is
mm-hmm.
there another way to get you the $550 a month extra that you need? And so one of the things I want to ask you is, how are you do you have any other resources? Like, do you have a 401k plan that you can start tapping?
No, I do not.
No IRA. So you're living on Social Security alone.
Pretty much, and a couple of small checks that come in since my husband passed away, yeah.
So I'm going to say, Marilyn, that you need to figure out what you would get from, I assume your mortgage is about $550 a month. You're still going to have your property taxes and your insurance to pay for.
Right.
You really have to figure out if it's worth it or if you should just get out, sell the house, take your 20 or 25% or 30% that you
mm-hmm.
have in equity and use that to rent a place that's dog friendly.
Okay.
That you can actually.
Okay.
Because the hard thing to say is that a reverse mortgage may not work for you.
Mm-hmm.
You may not have enough equity in the property to eliminate the payment.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then. That isn't going to work. Now, do you have any family around? Do you have any kids? Do you anybody that you can that can help you?
Not that I'd want to call on. No.
Okay. So then you got to do this alone, and so the
I'll figure something out.
Well, look.
God has to have a plan. So.
Well, I hope so. I think that it's unlikely that there is no plan, but I do think the best thing you can do. If you do qualify, is this company telling you qualify for a reverse mortgage?
He thinks, but he hasn't. See, I haven't given him the okay to hit it yet, you know.
Well, you can investigate without having him actually do anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
He should be able to look at the amount of equity that you have in the property.
Uh-huh.
And he should be able to tell you, number one, do you qualify?
Mm-hmm.
Number two, how much you're going to qualify for.
Okay.
And can he literally replace the mortgage. But I would rather see you get a number of different quotes and estimates. So do you have access to the internet where you are?
Yes.
Good. So you should get online and you should start searching for the four reverse mortgages in your area, Billings, Montana, and see if you can get information that will allow you to figure out whether or not this reverse mortgage is going to work for you and how it's going to work for you.
Okay.
And they should be able to tell you that before you pay them any money whatsoever, because this is super expensive.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I wish you a lot of luck, and I hope that it all goes well. It's very, very difficult. You should tune in this week to my newsletter. I think I'll try and put this in the newsletter. We've been researching some things about reverse mortgages. I had a question come in, and I'm not sure I'm going to have time right now to get to it. I only have 30 seconds left. But there are some very the question that came in was, what if you take out a reverse mortgage and then you don't actually tap into the line of credit and you let it just build and build and build? How fast will it actually grow? And will you be able to then tap a much bigger amount of money down the line? And that is the question we've been trying to answer. And it probably would apply to you as well, Marilyn. So stay tuned for that. Maybe I'll try and get to that in the next couple of minutes. 48 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB.
Check back often for breaking news, weather, and traffic updates all weekend. And join us Monday for Atlanta's Morning News. I'm Scott Slade. Find out about the crazy, ridiculous pipe bursting cold weather coming in Kirk Mellish's 5-day forecast first thing Monday on WSB.
It's 54 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time on WSB. 404-872-0750 or questions at thinklink.com. So a couple of weeks ago, we had somebody call the show and then send me an email asking about whether if you take out a reverse mortgage and you take out the line of credit version of it and you just let it grow, that they found out that it would grow over time and you then could take out even more money. And is this true? So we did some research. I had some people in my office go and make some calls. One of them called Guaranteed Rate, which is a great company, and they have a reverse mortgage specialist. And then we also called the the senior VP of marketing communications at the National Reverse Mortgage Lenders Association. And so the question of taking out a reverse mortgage as a line of credit but not using it and letting it grow, the answer is yes, you can do this. But and you do not have to use the line of credit. And if you let it sit, it will grow. You don't pay interest on it, but the line of credit grows because the amount that you have is assumed to, your house is assuming to be going up in value by typically 3-4% a year. And so if you let the money sit there, or the pot sit there, supposedly it increases at 3-4% a year. So over time, then it would grow much faster. Of course, they don't go and check whether your house is worth 3-4% a year. Now, they don't use the term interest when they talk about the line of credit growth as a growth concept, because it's originally tied to the fact that the home appreciates in value or grows, the home value grows over time, and so the line of credit does grow. And the idea behind the growth rate on unused funds, which is what it's called in the documents, is to allow borrowers access to future home value appreciation without having to refinance to gain access to it. Now, the question that I had received was, well, is this a good hedge against a bad stock market in the future? So I have a study, which I will make available through Twitter at Glink, from Harold Evensky, that makes the case for using a HECM Saver Reverse Mortgage, HECM, in conjunction with a two-bucket investment strategy as a way of improving retirement portfolio survival rates. So in other words, this bucket of money would grow, so if your portfolio, your investment portfolio, the stock market completely failed, you'd still have this to depend on. And the HECM mortgage is a non-recourse reverse mortgage loan, and you could pay it back at any time, typically after you move out of the house or you die, so they see it as a good investment, although they see it only as a good investment if you're taking it out in a bear market, not in a bull market. And if you think that we're in a bull market right now, where we are now at a top,